This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special.
Hello, besties. Welcome back to another episode of I Am Besties. I am your host, Vanessa, and I'm here with my lovely, beautiful, sexy.
Oh my God, we are going to make out today. Stephanie, and today we have the coolest guest ever. I feel like I'm your guys' number one fan, honestly. And I also feel like I've been talking to you guys for a while now because I listen and I talk back. Yeah. But we are here with Locatora Radio. With Diosa and Mala. Came all the way from LA, so shout out to you guys.
Thank it's
you
for real. No, you don't just drive from LA.
There's no
all the way over
thing.
Here to the IE for like anyone. You don't just do that.
So. No. I don't go to LA often, truthfully, because of the traffic. Though I feel like there's always construction. So I'm like, you know, whatever.
And the potholes and and the like, no space. You know, it's just like the streets
and the one way streets.
Yeah,
I'm sorry, I'm talking shit on y'all city.
That's okay. we agree completely.
Very confusing. My little brain.
No, it's just too much because I feel like I'm a suburbs girl for sure. Have you guys always lived in LA?
Yes, for the most part. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay.
I grew up in the San Gabriel Valley, which is just outside of the city of Los Angeles.
So we
understand the suburbs as well.
Nice. Yeah, I feel like I'm a suburbs. Like when I was young, I don't know. Did you guys watch Disney Channel?
Yes.
My favorite Disney Channel movie was Stuck in the Suburbs.
So good.
That was just like, I felt so identified. And I was like the Asian girl that would lie and be like, yeah, I've traveled all over the world and I had a new shit. That was me.
Hell yeah.
I've never heard of that show. I feel uncultured.
Are you serious?
Right now.
It's a movie. Yeah.
A Disney Channel original.
Wow. That was a time.
Yeah. Was like the peak of Disney movies.
Damn.
It's a good one.
Where was I?
I don't know, baby girl. It's okay. You're younger.
I was
than
probably
me.
Just like stuck on novellas or something.
Oh, true.
Many. So you never saw like Luck of the Irish or like the 13th Year?
Oh my God. I've never even heard of none of those.
Crazy. Wow. But I've never seen Halloween Town.
No.
I know.
I know I saw it, but I don't remember a thing from that movie.
It's because my grandma was like big on like El Diablo Te Sale por la Tele. So she didn't let me watch a lot of Halloween movies. Like when I would watch a scary movie, my mom would slap me. She'd be like, look, you're bringing the demons. And I'm like, I'm already here. You know what I mean? So it was like that. So you guys have your own podcast. Mm-hmm. Like I said, I'm a fan. How long have you guys been doing that for?
We've been podcasting since 2016.
Okay.
We're celebrating our sixth year this year.
Yeah, we're in the middle of our seventh season right
awesome.
Now.
Awesome. Mm-hmm. And how did you guys have been friends like prior to that, or how did that come about?
Well, so we call like the way that we met a millennial love story because even though we're both from LA, we were following each other on Twitter and Instagram like for a while before we actually met in person. And like I was going to college in Massachusetts. I was at Tufts and Diosa was at UC Santa Barbara. And then we graduated. We moved back home. We went to like this party, this meetup. Mm-hmm. We became friends. We started hanging out and partying a lot. And we started calling ourselves like the Mommy Collective, like little group of women that we all met at the same event. And then one day, Diosa like texted me and asked me a life altering question.
She proposed.
Basically.
Yeah, lifelong partnership, basically. Yeah, I asked her if she wanted to start a podcast and she said yes. And then a couple months later, we got to planning and then we launched November 2016.
Oh, wow.
That's so sweet.
And how's the journey been?
Kind of wild.
It's been wild.
It's been a wild ride. It's been fun.
Yeah. I mean, I think every podcast has their own journey, right? There's no like playbook on how to do this. Especially when we started in 2016, we were like one of few Latina podcasters. The journey, like, you know, we've been indie up until 2022 when we signed with iHeart. And that was like life-changing, life-altering. Mm-hmm.
No, 100%. So we have a multi-year exclusivity deal with iHeartMedia. So Locatora Radio is an iHeart show, that we produce and host and write and publish.
And but, they give you guys all that freedom as well, like to kind of, like, did they let you keep it your own almost?
Absolutely.
Oh, yes. Yeah, definitely.
That was non-negotiable for us. Awesome. Yeah.
That's so mm-hmm. cool. Oh, my gosh. We're going to get there one day.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, definitely.
You mentioned that you guys knew of each other a long time before you guys followed each other. Was that because you guys went to, like, the same high school? Like, you just went...
Just found each other online?
No, we just found each other online.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
We did have similar circles. We found out years later, like, after we became friends, we were like, do you know that person? And it was like, yeah, I know that person, too. Mm-hmm. And so, there was just always, we were kind of always in, like, the background in some way at the same, like, events, the same Catholic school dances.
Yeah, we, like, both ran cross country. So we're, like, thinking back, we were probably at the same cross country meets and didn't.
What?
And just never
met. We didn't know. Yeah.
Crazy how life
star-crossed
works.
Lovers.
Pretty
basically.
Much, yeah.
But so we started following each other on Instagram. At the time in 2016, nobody was using the word influencer. That word did not, it was not in the ether. Affiliate codes were not a thing. Yeah. There was no branded partnership labels. The DM did not exist yet. Like TikTok did not exist. Like, but there was this growing, like, kind of like Latina artsy online scene. Mm-hmm. And so I remember Diosa was, like, modeling for this, like, Latina owned boutique at the time. And I think that's when I first started following you, is because you were posting, like, your photos from the modeling.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. And then similarly, like, Mala was posting just, like, these killer looks, like, all the time. And so, and then, but before Instagram, we were following each other on Twitter. And the Twitter, I think, like, Mala has always been, like, funny. She's always, like, written very, like, funny things.
Yeah.
And so, but she also was writing, like, hella feminist things, like, men ain't shit type of things.
Love that.
And right. So I started following her on Twitter. And then eventually we moved to Instagram and then to in real life.
Yeah. In those years, like, it was kind of like the thing to talk about in feminist circles online was how men are trash. Like, yeah, that was the phrase. Like, there were some folks making merch, men are trash merch. Mm-hmm. Like, that was the talk of the town.
Let's
at the moment.
Let's start it over, guys. Oh my gosh, that is so cool, because I feel like, especially with making friends, like, you guys are, like, truly that, like, love story, because that's how I've always wanted to make friends. I feel like I talk to a lot of people online, but I don't really know how to approach them to be like, hey, I really, really like you as a friend. Like, let's meet up.
Yeah.
So that's crazy that you guys were able to, because you guys pretty much had a long distance relationship.
We did, essentially.
Yeah, basically.
I just also think, like, it doesn't always work. Like, I've met up with people that you think you're going to click with because you follow each other, and then you meet and it's a disaster. Like, you don't actually click, or something goes wrong, you know? So... yeah, I feel like it's not that it's one in a million, but like, you just never know when you take, like, an online relationship and you take it
that's
to real
true.
Meetup.
Do you think that might be because people don't present themselves as their authentic selves on social media?
I don't know. I think it's easy to present, like, a version of yourself, but, like, we all do that in our own ways wherever we go.
Yeah.
But I think, like, when you're talking behind a screen, like, and especially when you're seeing someone's feed, like, you think, like, you're gonna vibe with them, and then you meet them, and it's, like, terrible.
It's like it's like the online dating, right? Like,
literally.
Because when you're writing things and texting things, there's no tone. Mm-hmm. There's no tone. Mm-hmm. Like, you can't actually hear the other person.
Yeah.
And then photos also don't relay, like, vibe and energy,
right?
You know, and, like, if you've ever done online dating, like, this person looks cute in their photo, but then you meet them in person and the energy is not there. You know, and I think that that's also what happens with, like, meeting up with, like, digital friends.
And I think it's true that when you're online, you have so much time to think about your response to make sure it, like, it's tailored correctly to the person you're talking to, as opposed to, like, when you're in person, you know, you kind of just speak most of the time. Like, you think about it a little bit, but you're not, like, sitting there, like, pondering about it. So I think that's
proper response.
Yeah. So I feel like that's why two people feel like they're authentic selves online, but then when they want to really portray it in person, it's like, oh shit,
yeah,
I don't have time. My brain can't work that fast. Like, that's me, I feel, but I try a little bit.
And online, no one is awkward.
Yeah.
There's no awkward people online.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's impossible, you know? But in person, everyone is awkward.
Yeah.
We're all a little awkward. We're all a little feral right now, like post-pandemic. You know, 2020, we were all isolated. And so, yeah, I feel like people don't know how to interact right now, myself included. Yeah, like, totally. I feel super awkward sometimes.
How was the pandemic for you guys? What'd you guys do being locked up? What'd you guys deal?
Like, launched our company during the pandemic.
Yeah.
Oh, cool. Yeah. What kind of company is it?
Our production company.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Oh. Yeah. So in 2020, we did like the whole pitching. We pitched to a bunch of networks. We were trying to like develop and produce a brand new show. Mm-hmm. Got a bunch of no's. And in hindsight, we weren't ready, you know? And mm-hmm. I think it's one of those blessings in disguise. Mm-hmm. But then that pushed us, getting all the no's pushed us to launch our production company in 2021. So we formalized Locatora Productions. And really, like, looked at what we were doing in-house. We were writing, we were producing, we were audio editing, mm-hmm. hosting, and, like, really looking at it as production work, because it is. And so that's what led us to launch Locatora Productions in 2021.
Amazing. Yeah. And that's how your show, because you have she has her own show as well. Mm-hmm. That one, did you guys come up with that together, or that was more like you and you were like, you know what, I want to use like my own company to kind of branch off like that?
Yeah, totally. In the pandemic, I had quit my job. I was teaching at this all-girls school. I was the sex ed teacher. Mm. And then when the pandemic hit, I remember we had a conversation about either pursuing the podcast as a hobby forever or like focusing on it and building it and growing it and really making it a thing. So when the pandemic hit, I quit my job. And I was at home in quarantine and I was smoking all day, every day.
Love.
I still really am smoking all day, every day. Like, that hasn't stopped. But I was smoking and I was roller skating and then podcasting. And like, that's what I was doing that year. And then I remember thinking to myself, like, I need a show, but I want to base it around comedy. And I also want to base it around some type of a product. Like, I want to connect the show with something tangible. Okay. And then I hit up Diosa and I was like, I think I want to make a podcast for potheads. Like,
nice.
I think that's, and I've always loved the word marihuanera. Like, I love words and I love that word. And I like kind of the stigma around it. I love the history around it and the way that it's used, even though it's used in a derogatory way. Mm-hmm. I'm like, this is perfect. This is what my audience wants to hear. Cause I know there's a bunch of marihuaneras out there who are following us. And I knew that they would tune in. And so they did. And that show is now in its second season. I'm about to launch season 3 of Marihuanera on 420 2023. Nice. So that's coming up next month. Yeah.
And are you high on the show all the time too?
Yes, definitely. I smoke when I record. And when I have guests on, if they're smokers, I always invite them to light up. And so we'll light up and talk over Zoom. Not all my guests are smokers. I have guests on there who are sober and we'll talk about that.
Know,
and why and how and the journey and all
wrong
that good
with
stuff.
How do you go through life like that?
Right, exactly. So it's fun.
And you do incorporate products, like things, like you said?
Uh-huh. So we've had sponsors. Our big sponsor has been Umo, which is a Mexican-American-owned Salinas-based weed brand. They launched last year. So they have sponsored, like, season 2, they sponsored 5 episodes.
Love.
And then I run a show called Jokes and Tokes. It's a stand-up show. We just did our first one of the year at the Artistry Studio Lounge, which is a dispensary in West Hollywood. Mm-hmm. And so Umo, like, also sponsors the stand-up show, Jokes and Tokes. Yeah. That.
Do you feel like smoking makes you, like, funnier? Do you feel like it gives you inspiration for jokes?
You know, I don't know about funnier. It's just kind of become part of my process and my ritual at this point, honestly. And there's a lot of cannabis in stand-up. Like, if I go to an open mic or a show, the comics are outside smoking weed, like, before, during, after. Not every comic, but it's just, like, part of it, like, culture. The experience, I feel like. Yeah.
Sorry, Sal, you're gonna have to start smoking with
me. Basically.
We tried smoking one time for an episode and I got anxiety.
I know, she had a major panic attack.
So bad. Yeah, so I had to, we didn't even start
two hours later,
the original, like, time. I used to smoke a lot. Like, during the pandemic, I would smoke, like, 2 joints a day. Like, I was just, I loved weed. And I don't know where my body just started rejecting it. Every single time that I would smoke, just get a lot of really bad anxiety. And it's sad. I miss it so much, but I feel like I've definitely, it's not for me right now. It makes me sad because I think about the good times that I had on it. And I'm just like,
you with your Buzzball right now.
Literally. Like, now I'm an alcoholic. So Buzzballs, please sponsor me. I know it's a women-owned company. And look at us, all women here. We love it. Yes. I'm about to check it right now.
And Diosa, do you smoke or you don't smoke?
No, I partake in edibles.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, but no, I'm not a smoker. I've just never been able to get into it. I've tried it. I always feel like I'm doing it wrong. Mm. I just can't get into it. I've tried so much. I'll like smoke with her occasionally, like when she's at my house, or if like I've been drinking a little bit, I'm like a little more like, okay, sure, I'll have a little bit. Yeah. I'm a little more inclined, but I stick to edibles.
You're brave. For me, edibles always like hit me like a fucking truck. It was insane. I'm scared of edibles. So yeah, you can take a lot then.
I went to Lucille's 2 days ago and I took 2 edibles, but I forgot.
Oh no.
And we sat at the bar and I was just like sitting there kind of waiting for my food. And there were these, like this older couple next to me, but I guess they weren't from around like the IE. I don't know where they were from because they were like, oh, where am I? And we're like, oh,
where am I?
No, like, bro. Yeah, I was like, you're in Rancho Cucamonga. And he was like, this isn't Ontario Mills. And I was like, no. And so I just started kind of listening to them and they were like being very, very racist.
Oh no.
But it hit me like in that moment and I felt like I was in a movie scene. I was like, this is not really, like, I'm not really hearing this right now.
Oh shit.
And then I started acknowledging, I'm sorry. I don't know. I don't do it on purpose. I always somehow bash on white people in here, but but I started like acknowledging every white person in there and I started really paying attention to their conversations and I was like, but they were all older to be fair. So not that it's okay that they're old and racist, but whatever. And I was just like very aware of the conversations they were having. And I kind of felt like I had a culture shock almost because here in the IE, there's not really that many
and I feel
white
like
people.
Being high intensifies it too. I feel like.
Yeah. And I took 2 and I had forgotten like completely. I took them and then I left and it was like a 2-hour wait at Lucille. So by the time we sat down and we're like eating, I was like, What the fuck? Yeah, I was major tripping balls, but then I had a great time. I had a good meal, nice ribs, but I don't know why I felt like sharing that story.
Do you have any story that stands out to you, any of you two, high or drunk, any just funny or not so funny story that you're just like, oh my God, this just stands out to me.
None that I want
to
share.
That you're just like, I was under the influence and this happened.
Oh my God. Honestly, I don't think that I've ever had like a crazy weed experience, a crazy weed story. Like weed for me has never made me act insane.
Feral.
Thank God. Thank God.
Yeah. Like I just think that my body just has a perfect like reception system for weed.
It just fits
like,
into your DNA.
My cannabinoid system is just on 10, you know, like I am the perfect specimen.
Love
to smoke
that.
Weed. Yeah.
I'm jealous right
I'm jealous.
Now. Me too.
Like I was born to get high.
Yeah, I do smoke like religiously, but I sometimes have really bad panic attacks during it, but okay. Then it'll go away and I'm like, huh, that was funny. Like I kind of, my brain is just kind of like, oh, that didn't really happen. I feel like I always feel like I'm in a movie scene.
Yeah.
But yeah. How old were you when you started smoking?
The first time I ever, I guess the first time I ever smoked weed is like maybe my only interesting story.
Oh, okay.
So the first time I smoked weed, I was in high school and I want to say it was like senior year.
Oh, okay.
And I had this group of friends. There was 4 of us all together and we were having like a sleepover at my one friend's house. Mm-hmm. And she had the type of house where her parents were like, as long as you're doing it in the house.
Oh,
you know what I mean? Like it was chill.
Yeah.
Not my parents, but that's why we went to her house, not my house. So we go to her house and I remember she had gotten us like a big bottle of Patron, like a big one to split between 4 girls.
Ooh.
And she had a bunch of weed. And so we were like very committed. We're going to do all of it. So we got blasted. Like we got so lit and so crossfaded. And then we all made out with each other. And that was the first time I ever smoked weed. It was so cute.
That is so funny. Was the mom there when you guys were all making out?
No. I don't know where her parents were. I'm assuming they were on the other side of the house. But that was the first time. And I want to say that's the only like wild thing that I would associate with cannabis.
Did you see that coming?
Do you think your friends had that
intention? At least a friend that planned like the whole shebang.
she's like, we're gonna make out.
You know, we were all musical theater kids, so I think that like making out with each other was always on the table.
I've heard that about
we're theater kids. Like,
I've heard that theater kids are something else.
At my school, they were wild. Mm-hmm. I always wanted to be part of them, and I think they always like we just. I think we all had different perspective. Like they had a different perspective of me, and I had a different perspective of them. But I always wanted to be part of the theater kids.
Yeah, it's a little culty. Yeah, I think part of it is when you do the theater. If you're in acting class, or if you're in rehearsal, or if you're like getting ready to perform, you do all kinds of like exercises and warm ups, and you're like touching each other all the time, and like being vulnerable with your bodies and emotions, and like spending lots of time together. You know, like making lots of eye contact, and there's just something about it that like you're bonding, and I think that's why theater kids are like little sex freaks.
Oh my gosh, were you part of a theater kid too?
No, I went to an all girls Catholic school, and we didn't have a theater group.
Did they say
that was devil stuff?
Probably. No, they didn't. But no, we didn't have anything like that. I was like on the cross country team, and there were like queer girls there. And I guess, I had like my queer awakening at the Catholic school, which I think is so funny and ironic.
I love that.
Are you both queer?
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, love that for you guys. Wait, when you said partnership earlier, did you mean in that way as well?
No.
Okay.
We've never been romantic.
Have you guys ever kissed?
Be honest. Have you thought about it?
No, we've actually never kissed either. No.
All right, kiss now. Kiss right now.
We're having a little flashback to her first times getting drunk and smoking weed.
That would definitely go behind a paywall for sure.
Absolutely. Yeah. Subscribe to the Patreon.
And it's funny because we literally just brought it back. We dropped today, right? The Patreon episode?
That was today? Yeah. Dude, I have no sense of time because I posted that. That's crazy. Were your parents like wanted you in a Catholic school, or was more of like they just?
Oh no, I went through K through 12 Catholic school.
Wow,
like they were very invested in me, like going to a private school.
How was that experience for you?
It was cool. I think like I went to like a pretty liberal Catholic high school, considering it was a Catholic school.
Okay,
there were a lot of the teachers were queer, and so I think that also shaped the experience, where like everyone thinks, for example, there were some schools in LA, all girls schools, where you couldn't take another girl to prom or to a winter formal, even if you were just friends.
Got it.
You could not take a same sex or same gender.
What?
Yeah, but at my school, like we could do that. Okay. And so like I went with like my high school girlfriend to like all the events, and it was fine. And so that's when I started learning like, oh, this is a little more liberal than I think the other Catholic schools, because it was allowed.
Okay.
That's crazy.
How do you feel like the experience was for both of you to kind of come to that realization? Did you guys know from a very young age? Did you guys like bicurious? Like, did you guys date boys too? Or?
Oh yeah. I think that I've just always been like pretty sensual and sexual as a person. Okay. And I think that I've always just kind of really liked people. And I've always thought that like women are awesome and beautiful and literally the best.
Of course.
But men are easy. You know what I mean? Like they're just super easy. It's really easy.
Right. Doesn't take that much.
They're like more available.
They're very available. Yeah.
There's an abundance of them.
Yeah. They're not hard to pull. Anyways.
You got this. You got this, Vanessa.
I don't know. That's on the back burner right now.
Oh, wait. So are we like experiencing our own like bi curiosity?
Oh, no. But my first kiss was a girl, actually.
Hell yeah.
That's funny. It wasn't intentional. It was like my best friend from the apartment complex that I used to live at. And I was like 8. And she was like, come to the jacuzzi with me in the nighttime. And my apartment was right in front of the pool. So my mom was like, yeah, that's fine. You guys can go. I'll watch you guys from the balcony. But she didn't watch it. She went inside the apartment. Like, we were just there. And then my friend was like, oh, let's go underwater and, like, hold our breath. And I was like, let's see who can do, like, the longest. And I was like, yeah, like, okay, cool. And we were underwater. She just, like, pulled me and kissed me. I had never been kissed before or nothing. She was my completely like best friend from school. Like I loved her, and I was really sad after that because I was confused. I didn't understand what that was about, and I felt awkward. I didn't know how to be around her anymore after that. And we just, you know, she kept my SpongeBob skirt. I didn't know how to ask her for it back after that. Oh, crap, my phone. And, yeah, so it was, after that, we didn't talk anymore. I feel like I was so young. I didn't know how to handle that situation. So that was.
I'm sorry. I don't know how personal, like, you guys are, like, okay with getting. Because I have questions, but I don't want to, like, you know, overstep or anything.
I think I'll just say no if I don't want to ask. Yeah, because
I wanted to ask, like, because your parents, I'm assuming, were very Catholic to help put you in a Catholic.
I was going
to
ask you that, school. Too, because you mentioned about your parents. You're like, not in my household.
You're
we
totally. Both have very Catholic parents.
I went to Catholic school, too, for K through 8.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. So only high school was, like, public school?
No, my high school was a private school, but it's an independent school, like non-denominational, non-religious.
Oh, okay, okay, okay. And so when you're, were your parents kind of, I guess, in a way, like, shocked when you guys came out? Or what did you not feel like you guys needed to do that?
I've never done a coming out with them.
I'm like, Mala has it.
I, like, don't really believe in it for myself. I just am.
Yeah.
And they know? Like, they know.
I mean, I don't know.
They have to know.
They have to know. I've never, like, had a conversation with them about it.
Yeah, and you've never brought, a girlfriend around or something?
No, but I've also only ever brought one boyfriend around.
Yeah. Gotcha.
Like, I'm not... My family is very, we don't share that much of our personal, like, romantic stuff. Like, it's really not part of our family culture. Mm. And in my family, it's one of those things where, like, they don't like bringing around every little boyfriend that you have. Like, this one better be really serious.
Gotcha.
We don't want to see a new fool every month. Like, every holiday, there cannot be a new person. Like, that's too much. Like, so I, like... weight in the cut, you know. It's like Haley's Comet when I bring someone home. It's a very
sighting. Because when I was younger, I had kind of a situation where everyone thought I was gay, and my parents, like, took that not well. And I was like, I always thought the same way. Even though I wasn't gay, I was like, even if I was, like, I don't have to tell anyone. Like,
no,
feel like that's when I became, like, an ally. Not because I wasn't an ally before, I just didn't really understand what it was, like, the gravity of it. Not of, like, being, oh my God, I'm like, don't cancel me. I know, but just kind of, like, I didn't really know that there was something else because I wasn't gay. So when it, like, that came out, I was like, fuck, like, what does anyone care, even if I am gay? Like, what, that's really none of anybody's business. So I feel like after that, like, people, because my best friend's gay, and they would be like, oh, is he gay? And I'd be like, I don't fucking know. Like, does it really matter to you? And I felt, like, very strongly about that. And I think it was, I don't know if you guys have seen Sex Lives of College Girls.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
I think one of the actresses says that in the show. She's like, I don't need this. Like, I don't need to come out for this. Like, I don't need this, like, huge awakening. And I was like, girl, I feel that, even though I don't. You know what I mean? Yeah. I feel like I'm rambling. I'm sorry. I did take an edible before this.
Oh, gosh.
And it is hitting me right now.
Can we cut real quick, you guys? My family keeps calling me, and this is not normal, so I just want to answer real quick. We're going to take a brief break to shout out our sponsors at Manscaped. Ladies, if you didn't already know, it's tax season here in the U.S., and you know what that means? It means that Manscaped is here to make sure you get your paperwork filed and the men in your life all styled. Take a little off the top of your tax return money and spend it on the important things this year, like family, friends, and ball deodorant. Taxes are pain, but that doesn't mean grooming has to be. By going to manscaped.com for 20% off plus free shipping with code BESTIES.
Plus, with all the products you have, you don't have to be sweating and nervous when you're doing your taxes. You can be feeling, you know, take a nice little shower because that body wash is 10-10.
Oh, yeah, it is.
It's so refreshing. So do your taxes relaxed this year.
Yeah.
What a better way to invest in your tax return than into your loved ones, and what better gift than elegant, beautiful balls? Manscaped has the full package from head to toe to make sure everyone gets their money's worth this April. The Performance Package is the ultimate bundle to help someone reinvent their look and confidence.
The Lawnmower 4.0 trimmer is the star of the show, offering a precise shave on all the wildest hedges. Equipped with LED light, the trimmer can navigate in and out of those difficult areas with ease. Did we mention it's waterproof as well? More exciting news, the Performance Package 4.0 now includes Manscaped's brand new Weed Whacker 2.0 ear and nose hair trimmer. This bad boy has been totally revamped with a new and improved blade and motor, and dare I say, it is the best ear, nose, hair trimmer ever. Cordless, rechargeable, and comes with skin-safe technology, which helps reduce nicks, snags, and tugs. After clearing your nose, make sure to get rid of that foul ball smell with the Crop Preserver and Crop Reviver. The Crop Preserver is an anti-chafing ball deodorant and moisturizer. The Crop Reviver spray-on toner for balls. Plus, all of you ladies with big bearded boys in your life, Manscaped now has beard products. Yeah, the whole package.
The brand new Beard Hedge Pro Kit is the head honcho containing 9 plus products plus wet goods. This is everything you need to craft your signature look. The start of spring also marks the start of Testicular Cancer Awareness Month in April. Manscaped has partnered with the Testicular Cancer Society to bring awareness to testicular cancer, men's health, and early cancer detection. Get 20% off with free shipping with the code BESTIES at manscaped.com. That's 20% off plus free shipping with the code BESTIES at manscaped.com. Don't just get your money back this year. Get the best gift on the market with Manscaped. And we now return to your regular scheduled programming.
So I do want to ask, you're a journalist, right? You're going to school for journalism. Yes. How did that come about? Like, how did you find that passion?
Yeah, well, I think through the podcast, you know, we've been telling stories. We've interviewed so many women, so many artists over the past 6 years. And so I just wanted to take that to the next level and, like, professionalize in a way, especially with launching the production company and just doing my own writing. I, like, wanted to, like, formalize and, like, get the master's.
Oh, so it was after, like, once you started the podcast that you made that decision.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I mean, I've always been a writer, mainly, like, fiction, mm-hmm. short stories. And then when we met, we both started, or around the same time, I started writing, like, features for, like, different online publications like Remezcla, Hip Latina, and yeah, then after we launched the production company in 2021, I played with the idea of applying to school, and I did, and that's, I'm about to graduate, so it's all
amazing.
My
super congratulations.
Yeah.
Is your production company mainly just for, like, podcasts, or are you also planning on doing, like, short films? Because you say, like, writing fiction.
Yeah, we actually have produced short films, and we have one. It's called Loquitas Anonymous. And it's on YouTube.
Awesome.
What is it about?
So Loquitas Anonymous, it's sort of like a futuristic, like, sci-fi movie. Ooh. And what we put together is an 8-minute short that I think is more of a proof of concept. Okay. For something I think could be like a full length feature film or like a TV show or a web series. So, like, over the years, you know, like, a lot of podcasts do video, you know, right? Like, you guys do video, and, like, we used to do some video in studio when we were at Espacio 1839 before the pandemic. But what we have done more of on the video side of things is creating, like, scripted skits and shorts that kind of expand the podcast world. So, like, Loquitas Anonymous is a work of fiction, and we're, like, in full hair and makeup and costumes, and we had, like, a full cast, and our friends were in it, and with dialogue and characters and sets and the whole thing. And then for each season of Locatora, each new season, we write and act in and produce, like, a short. So, like, season 6, we did, like, a Locatora lemonade stand. And the premise was, you know, we're raising money to launch our next season.
Oh, amazing.
You know, and then when we did season 7, our first season with iHeart, we did a scripted short where it's like we're being abducted by aliens, but it's the iHeart network. Like, beam us up, like, take us to your network.
That you know? Is so cool. Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. So it's been fun. We try and get creative.
Definitely. I see that. What are you guys' signs?
I'm a Capricorn.
I'm a Libra.
Oh, I picked up Libra energy. My favorite cousin is a Libra. And literally, I feel like you guys radiate like the same energy. I didn't get Capricorn for you, though. I thought like Sag.
Oh, okay. Very close. Close.
Yeah. I love Sag. I love Capricorn. My sister, one of my favorite sisters is Capricorn.
I love that. One of my favorite sisters.
Wait, what's Capricorn? What do you mean? Like, what month is that?
January.
December. Like late December, January.
Oh, okay. Then my mom's a Capricorn.
Yeah, I'm a January Capricorn.
No, oh,
yeah. Okay. And Capricorns, like, people, like, the symbol is not just a goat. It's a sea goat. It's half goat, half, like, mer person. It has a tail.
Oh, I don't think I knew that.
Yes.
Oh, interesting.
The Capricorn is a sea goat.
That makes sense.
I didn't even know it was a goat.
For you.
Okay, for me.
Because you like love the ocean.
I do.
You're
love
like
the
a little
ocean.
Sienna on, like, in the summer.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, yeah. Cute.
Yeah. Okay, thank you.
Starbucks logo.
Hell yeah.
What did you go to school for?
I, in school and undergrad, I studied American studies, which is basically like, it's an interdisciplinary degree focusing on like history, sociology, and the construction of like racial identity in the United States. So that was my focus. But I went to college, I graduated like in 2014. It's been almost 10 years. Yeah. More recently, I've been taking classes like at the Groundlings doing improv and stuff.
Oh, okay. Cool, cool.
And so, because you're a comedian. Ooh, I want you to talk about that. How did that come about? Did you always know you wanted to be a comedian? Did you always feel like you liked that? That was a passion of yours?
It's a more recent thing. I think I have like 2 years now of doing stand-up. But when I was younger, like I did the musical theater, and a lot of the parts that I would get cast in were like the comedic roles. Mm. So that, and I remember my theater director at the time would tell me, she's like, you're kind of a character actress. Like, you're good in a supporting role that's bringing comedic relief, right? Mm. And so I'm like, okay, cool. And then as we like started podcasting, we did more speaking engagements. I put out the Marihuaneta podcast, and I was just getting like also invitations to like, come tell a story here. Mm. Come host this thing, you know? And so what was happening is like, people are basically asking me to go do stand-up comedy, but I hadn't identified that for myself yet. So then I started going to open mics, and I go to the Chatterbox over here in Covina. Mm-hmm. And I go to the Thursday mic, and now I get booked on shows here and there, and I perform, and it's a lot of fun.
You get booked a lot, not here and there.
I get booked. I'm getting booked more and more.
She gets booked a lot.
Which is exciting. Awesome. Yeah.
I love a friend who like is like, girl, don't downplay it. Come on. Let's say how it is. Let's say how it is. I love that.
Do you call it like you identify 100% with comedian? Like you're a comedian?
Oh, now I definitely do. There was a time where I was like, after college, I like went to I was like looking for open mics, but I was finding mostly like poetry open mics. Like I went to the Poetry Lounge.
I had a moment, like poetry open mics in LA. Like when we first re-landed in LA, that there was like a growing poetry scene.
Yeah, slam poetry, spoken word. And I remember going and I'm like, this is cool, but this isn't exactly it.
Yeah.
Similarly to Diosa, early on, I had written a couple of reported essays like for online publications, like for Vibe and Everyday Feminism. And I was interviewing folks, and we interview folks, and I still interview folks like on both shows. But I also was like, I'm not quite a journalist. I'm not a poet. I love the podcasting. And then when I started doing the comedy, it's like, okay, this is the right fit.
Yeah.
This is comfortable. This is clicking for me.
Yeah. That's so cool. I would love to go to one of your shows. Every time Saul has a show, I just so happen to not be in the state. So I've only ever been to one comedy show, I think, ever in my life. And I don't remember who I saw.
I've been to like two or three at the Ontario Improv.
Oh, yeah.
I don't remember who I saw either because I'm not big on names. I was just more like, I have these free tickets, you want to come? I'm like, hell yeah, like, I'll go.
But I am super jealous of, like, LA having kind of, like, that creative scene. Because I think here, I mean, where would we even find?
You have to make it.
Yeah.
Like, you all have to make it.
Literally.
That's, like, what it comes down to.
Yeah.
And I see.
I in comedy, baby. So there's comedies. Because comedy doesn't have a line.
And I see it growing. I feel like that definitely is stepping up, like, just in general, like, all around. See a lot of people starting their own endeavors, and the IE is getting more like recognition for a lot of things, and I feel like that's nice.
Yeah, it's cool because like I like the way you guys talk about even just your high school, like there's so much creative outlets. I feel like I always wanted to be creative, but I don't think I was ever surrounded with people who really cared about that. I think that's why I wanted to be in with the theater kids so much. Mm. But I auditioned once and I didn't make it. And at the time, I didn't handle rejection well at all. So I was like, okay, well, this one person told me no, so I definitely can't do this again. So I was really heartbroken about it, but I was always so jealous because I feel like they're so much better at, I guess, identifying with their emotions because they have this outlet. And I'm always like, I always imagine myself making videos, but I don't ever actually make them because I wouldn't even know how to go about it just because I've never had like a space like that. I think that's why I started like loving the podcast so much, because it allowed me to say things that I would pretty much only say to myself. And like, I'll be in the shower having a full on conversation. I'm like, damn, if I was in a podcast right now, like this would be so cool. Yeah. So I think that's really, really cool about LA specifically that you guys just have. Cause even my cousin, she went to like a creative arts high school and she's like a nurse. Like she didn't even, I was so jealous. Speaking of, shout out to her because she gave us PRP facials. So yeah, if you guys are interested, she's from LA and she gives
really good. Let's talk about facials. That experience real quick, because I definitely think it was really nice of her. She has her own LLC as well. She's starting her own company, and this is like,
shout out to my
cousin.
She's
a nurse, cosmetic nurse. Is that what they're
called? She works for a plastic surgeon.
Yes, cool. And she's has years of experience, and she gave us what is called a vampire facial, and it's like microneedling. She like drew blood and. What is it?
She like draws your blood and she puts it in a centrifuge and then it like separates
the blood cells? I don't know.
The blood cells and the plasma. The plasma is like just straight collagen on your face. So then she'll like microblade it and then like your pores are open and she can inject it or she can just put it as kind of like a cream on your face.
And she did both.
Yeah. And it's, it also create like, I put it on my hairline because it stimulates like hair growth and all that. And she's from LA. So
yes.
You guys should definitely.
That's amazing.
Yeah. She's really, really cool.
It was a great experience. Pain level, there wasn't much because she numbed our whole face. Thank the Lord. Thank the Lord. But yes, it was an awesome experience. I definitely, with just one session, I did feel like my skin was more plump and more, it's like more shiny, but not like in the gross, like shiny, like it was
like a glow.
A glow. Yeah, that's the word I'm looking for. So it was a nice glow.
It's like re-injecting your own collagen into your face.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
And you didn't even, even the injection part didn't even hurt because like our face was pretty numbed up. I feel like the only pain I did feel was like on my hairline because she did mention it's just bone. There's no like fat or nothing. Right. So just the hairline did hurt a bit. But other than that, it was a great experience. I would say 10 out of 10. I would definitely go back and do it again. Because if you obviously want to see results, it's something you have to do. Like,
again, and it's not like times. Super pricey either. So
no.
Me just putting a whole ad in for my literally. Cousin right now. Sorry,
no. She really did. Yeah, you know, she came through for us, and she was exactly. She was really sweet.
She's actually one of the people when I was younger that I would look up to because she was so crazy. Like, she learned how to play the piano, and she was like just crazy. I feel like that's why I love your guys' podcast so much, because you both have your own things, and I love how you guys just bring that together into your podcast. I think that's why I was so intrigued with it, because I listened to some podcasts and even like our own, I feel like I kind of compared it a little bit, but I was like, your guys is definitely more like, I don't know. I feel like when I'm a grown up, that's how I want my podcast to be.
And it's funny because when we were actually getting the facials, she was like, let's listen to the Locutora. And she put it.
Listen, you're going to love it.
We were all like, talking, we're like, we're listening to you guys, and we're like all making comments within ourselves based off like what you guys were saying.
I totally forgot about that.
It was a vibe.
That's so cute.
Yeah. Well, I think creativity is such a lifeline, and it's like not something that's prioritized as a society or like in schools, but like everyone like needs some type of creativity. Like people get home and they watch TV. They watch, everyone has their favorite Netflix show, right? And they don't identify that as like, there's like so many people behind these shows, right? Or music, right? Everyone puts the radio on, their Spotify playlist, what have you. And it's like such a lifeline for so many people, but it's not necessarily prioritized or given much importance.
Yeah, I agree. I feel like growing up, I always just heard like the narrative of, I'm just not a creative person, you know? And I feel like a lot of people just kind of identified with that, myself included. I saw a lot of people playing sports, like in the theater, taking cooking classes, learning an instrument, you know, being actresses, actors, singing, like doing all of these amazing things. Like even I took art class and, you know, I was okay, but I would see like people in art class that were like way advanced and just so good. And you know, just honed in on their craft. And I was just like, well, I'm just not a creative person. And I didn't realize until recently that it's something that you learn. It's not something that you're born with. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that mentality shift has definitely helped me to get out of my comfort zone and try new things. And so anyone listening, please try new things, get out of your comfort
zone. Start your podcast.
And anything that you might be inclined towards, you know, it's a process. And I feel like definitely it takes discipline. I feel like creativity, it should go hand in hand with discipline to just keep going. Even if you feel like you're not good at it, you know, it'll come with time. And I feel like that's what, kind of like what you said when you got rejected from your art class. Mm-hmm. Literally, that's what happened.
That was a play.
I mean, my bad. My bad, your art class.
It was a musical.
You're right. My bad. I felt like I was the same in the sense of like, I would try something new and I'd be like, I'm not good at it. So I'm just not going to keep trying. And I didn't realize that, well, duh, you're not good at it. It's the first time you're trying it. Like, you have to keep going.
I think that's you want to try something. You're like, I have to be perfect or I'm not going to. Exactly. I'm not gonna keep this going.
Exactly. And I also felt like I had to love something in order to do it. And I didn't realize until recently, you first learn about it, you try it, and then the love comes over time. And I was like, okay. So it's just a lot of just unlearning and learning that I've been doing recently that's made me realize I could be a creative person.
Does your production company, if someone pitched you an idea or something, is that also something that you guys do? If they were I have this vision and I would really like for you guys to,
Yeah, that's something that ideally we would do. Yes.
Oh, okay. So it's not just your own kind of skits endeavors that you guys do.
Correct.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
We definitely see ourselves. I think part of this journey, and kind of to piggyback off of what you're talking about, is we were podcasting for years before we started calling ourselves producers. Mm-hmm. We didn't identify that we were doing the work of producers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or script writing. Mm-hmm. And I think that we were at the beginning just identifying as we host this show, but it's so much more than that. And, in that spirit, we see so many other talented people out there that we would love to produce shows for. Mm-hmm. We see that there's holes that can mm-hmm. be filled and other shows to be made. And if we can bring those shows to life on the back end using the infrastructure we've created,
right.
I think that's definitely something we want to do in the future to grow out the slate.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
And since the beginning of your guys' journey, you've kind of been I guess connecting mostly with the Latina side of in the industry.
Yeah, a big chunk of our audience is Latina, Latinx. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, we try to have a diverse group of women or diverse group of guests that we have on our show, mm-hmm. Not just Latinas, having African American Black women on the show, Asian women, Indigenous folks as
right.
well. But our target, not even our target audience, just our audience is Latinas. If you look at our stats, they tend to be young Latinas our age.
And I feel like that's beautiful, because I feel like for so long there hasn't been a lot of representation, just seeing people like us that look like us on the media. So I feel like that's, to me, I feel like that's a huge win. Obviously you want to be diverse, but at the same time, you realize that people look up to you and you are creating a change and influencing people from our community. And I feel like that's amazing.
Yeah, because you carve a space for someone who maybe feels like they don't have it.
Yeah.
I love that. I really do, actually. I'm really not just saying that. I do enjoy your show so much because I do connect with it a lot. I wanted to ask you guys because personally, I don't really connect with Chicano culture, not because of any reason, just because I always thought that Chicano culture was more like LA culture.
Mm.
So do you guys feel like, because I know you said you were from the suburbs, you still had that connection with it because of your family or just because, you really, that was just the side of I guess Hispanic culture that you saw yourself
well,
in.
Well, I definitely identify as Chicana. I'm third gen mm-hmm. and my dad raised me to identify as Chicana and he's an OG Chicano, from way back.
Yeah.
He's from Bakersfield.
Oh, okay.
And the thing is Chicanidad, Chicanos are in Texas and in mm-hmm. Colorado and in Chicago. I mean, the American Southwest, wherever you have pockets of Mexican Americans, you have that experience.
Yeah.
And in some ways, what I find very interesting is there's no monolithic Chicano experience. And in some ways, if you are of Mexican descent born here, there is a little bit of that is Chicano culture.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It just is the definition is of Mexican descent born here.
Yeah.
There's a very basic generational like definition there.
Right.
But at the same time, like, I think that there's a lot of people who are like half Mexican, half Central American, right? Mm. Or like the US has half Mexican, half Peruvian. And so then like that's its own experience as well.
Right.
Yeah. In college, I identified as a Chicana, and then I went to Peru, lived there for 6 months, and it just changed my perspective. Mm-hmm. I definitely have more of probably the Chicana experience than like maybe first gen, like Peruvian immigrants. I am a first gen like Latina, but the Chicana identity doesn't necessarily fit for me anymore. I respect it. It's like so much of a part of LA life and growing up. But it's not necessarily a label that or identity that fits with me. But I think it informs like so much of being a Latina living in LA, regardless. Right.
I think it was too, because where I'm from in Mexico, they're more like fresa. Mm. So the people that I would speak to that were more like connected to that Chicano culture, they'd be like, oh, like, you're just a fresa, like, you're not really. And I'd be like, oh, okay, so then I don't know what the fuck I am. And so when I actually looked up the definition, it was like, oh, okay, like, it's in a Mexican native born in America. I was like, I don't know where the hell, because I love it so much, and I didn't feel like I really was able to connect with that, because I feel like in the media right now it's mostly Chicano culture that's being, I guess, put out, and I want to connect with it. I just feel like I don't know how because of that, because I'm like, okay, I know I am like by title, but I don't have that, I guess I don't have that experience. I don't feel like I had that experience, but I was also like a lot in Mexico, so I was always very like, I'm Mexican. Like, I grew up, all my summers were in Mexico, like any vacation we had, I was in Mexico. So I felt like that too. I wasn't sure if I could connect with both more than anything.
Yeah, I think it goes back to like, you know, we talk about like pochos and no sabo kids. Yeah. And I think that's a very tangible part of like a Chicano identity and experience, like language, Spanglish, loss of language. I think all that stuff, it's like, that's part of that identity. I didn't grow up going to Mexico at all. My parents didn't take me to Mexico.
Oh, okay.
My Spanish is trash. I'm a pocha.
But you know, do you understand it?
Yeah. And I like, you know, I studied abroad. I live with my grandparents. Like, my Spanish has gotten a lot better over the years, right? But it's one of those things where it's like, after a few generations, if you're not Mexican anymore, then what are you here?
Right.
Like, after three generations, like, we're not Mexican citizens. I'm not visiting Mexico. You know what I mean? So like, if I'm not Mexican, am I a white person now after three generations? Yeah. Well, that's not accurate either, you know? And we do have this history here. Like, my dad's mom was born in California. You know what I mean? Like, we have generations here. So that's where that identity, like, for me is rooted in and grounded in, because it's that anchor, because we still exist. We still have this distinct culture and history. Like, we're not fully assimilated because we recognize we come from this other place. Like, mm-hmm. we're still attached to that.
Yeah. And you like entail that into your everyday lives too. Mm-hmm. Like, you're not living like the American picket white fence life.
Well, some of us are.
Yeah.
but no, yeah. So it's all of those things. And like, you know, I think the no sabo stuff is so interesting, because there's a lot of that in the like Latinx podcast space, like reclaiming that and talking about that and keeping that sort of just as part of the conversation.
Yeah. And I do love that they're doing that they're like, you know, I don't speak English, I mean Spanish, but I still am connected to that anyways. Mm-hmm. Because I think that was my parents, I guess. They kind of really put that in me. My mom was always like, oh, well, she's Mexican and her kids don't speak Spanish.
Right.
And I'd be like, okay, but do they talk to each other? Like, I'm sure they understand each other. My mom would be like, no, no está bien. And I'd be like, who fucking cares?
No, I grew up in a super strict, like, Spanish-speaking household to the point where I didn't want to speak Spanish because if you didn't know a word, te regañaban, you know? So it was very intense. So I hated speaking Spanish. I'm, like, fluent. I'm, like, I don't identify as a no sabo kid. I love the no sabo kids. I love that they're, like, reclaiming, because what really bothers me and I think is always left out of the conversation is, like, the history of violence of children that would speak Spanish in schools. And to get mad that there's generations of kids or adults now that don't speak Spanish is erasing the like societal implications at the time that you would get punished for speaking Spanish, or that assimilation was a part of surviving here.
Right.
And I think it's so disrespectful to get mad that people don't speak their quote native language anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've actually heard that a lot I have like a lot of friends who didn't learn Spanish, and they said it was because their parents and grandparents would say, no, like we can't, they don't have to know Spanish. Like we're here now. We don't want them to get hurt. We don't want anything to happen to them. So let's just not even teach them Spanish. Like let's just let them know English. That's all they need. We're here and leave it at that. And I feel like that's sad. Like,
yeah,
I didn't, honestly, I'm going to be completely honest. I feel so uncultured listening to you say that, because I didn't even know that. To me, I just thought they wanted to just assimilate, you know, that's why, like, let's just not teach them Spanish so they can just know English and not be behind, you know. But to hear that there was violence is
kids were getting hit in school. Mm-hmm. And like something like my mother has or had like a very like Spanish, like Mexican name. And so when she migrated here, when she was a kid, her kindergarten teacher, a white lady, like changed her name. And my mom, like now all of her life has like gone by this name. Not her name. But my mom, it wasn't until a couple years ago, I like unpacked that with her. And I was like, that is so problematic that your teacher did that to you, because she thought you had a name that sounded older. It was like a señora name.
Oh my God. Right?
And she changed it. And my mom legally goes by this name that was not given to her by her parents.
Wow.
And she went as far as like legally changing her name, because it's like who she is now. And so I'm like, you had this identity switch when you were a little kid, which is fine because you didn't know you were a kid.
Yeah.
But this teacher like did that.
Wow.
And so it's not just violence of like getting physically hit, but of like how you're treated, like changing your name. Like that's like real violence that's what really bothers me. And I'm not a Nosavo kid, but it really bothers me when people like harp on that people that are Latinos don't speak Spanish. Well, because there's real implications and real violence that happens.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. My dad would tell stories about how the kids with Spanish accents would be put in special education classes. And that was very common at the time. My dad was born in 1952 in Bakersfield. And my dad comes from several generations of farm workers, right? And one of the reasons why kids today can speak Spanish in school is because Chicanos and Nosavo kids of the past were marching and doing sit-ins and lobbying and working on legislation so that immigrant children were not literally being beaten in school. They were being beaten in school and put in special ed. And so educational and work opportunities being denied. The fact that there is Spanish language in our schools today and that it's even encouraged and we have Spanish language immersion is a direct result of Chicanos and other formerly immigrant communities, right, of several generations ago, making sure that that's possible. And I think that's a piece that gets left out and forgotten quite often. Why do we have Spanish classes now?
That's amazing.
We had to fight for that.
I don't think anyone's like, I mean, at least on my end, I don't think that's something that I ever even really considered. I think it's because my parents weren't really, they were just kind of in our own world, and they created this world for us where like when we came home, you know, this is a Mexican household, that I didn't really think about the experiences of kids that didn't speak Spanish. I was just like, oh, well, it's the same thing for everyone. Everyone just goes home and it's okay. So that the fact that you're saying that right now is absolutely blowing my mind.
And I think that part of me too is like, I feel like the identity and the history that people would feel differently about it if we had any access to this history at all.
Right.
I think sometimes we formulate opinions about like people without actually knowing anything about them.
You just hear something and run with it.
And on the internet, it's so, you see one tweet, you see one 30-second TikTok.
And you're like, real, I'm gonna run with this and just share that.
Yep.
Damn.
Like reading is still important.
Reading is fundamental. Yeah.
Reading still matters. Yes. Going to class still matters. Like,
and it's making me think about, like you said, it's history that isn't shared, because I'm thinking back on like all of my history classes, like, none of this was ever talked about. It was just mostly focused on like the American experience and how we came about to be. And like, that was like it.
Yeah. I mean, it's a shame that it takes you going to like a CC or like a university to learn like Chicano history mm-hmm. because it was so huge in Los Angeles and the American Southwest. But it should be a part of like public education at large, no matter what school you go to.
A lot of the struggles in Arizona, Texas, mm-hmm. The banning of books, like they were specifically targeting Chicano studies classes, mm-hmm. ethnic studies classes, because where else is this specific history mm-hmm. going to be housed?
Right.
If not in a Chicano studies curriculum or in a Black studies curriculum, right. mm-hmm. African-American studies, yeah. like it's just not going to exist anywhere else. And so if we don't have it in the school, then all those kids mm-hmm. who directly relate mm-hmm. to that history on some level just have no idea. How can you have a connection to the history or the culture if you don't see it and you don't, there's no access at all.
Yeah. And now that I think back to, I think all my teachers were either white or Black. I don't think I ever had a Latino teacher growing up. And I think right now that you said that how they would put them in like special ed classes. I remember now, like, I remember I was drinking water one time in class and he was white. He was my fourth grade teacher. He came and grabbed my water and he tossed it against the wall. And that always stuck with me. And I was like, why did he do that to me?
That's aggressive.
And I'm now like the way you're saying it, I was like, I kind of was one of the only Latina girls in my, not in my school, but for sure in my class. And my best friend in fourth grade, she was Latina, but she was like white passing. And I was really dark as a little girl, like really dark. And I loved being Morena because I love songs about Morenas. Like, I just loved it. And so now that I'm thinking back, I feel like you're just opening my eyes to like all the fucking bitches in my elementary school.
Well, I mean, like, also like California, there was racial segregation in our schools in California. Mm-hmm. Yeah. There were schools for Mexican kids and Black kids and Asian kids separate from the white kids. Mm-hmm. And the court case that predates Brown versus Board of Education, and Brown versus Board of Education famously desegregated and integrated our public schools in this mm-hmm. country at the Supreme Court case, right? But there was a case before that, Mendez versus Westminster. And that was a family, the dad was Mexican, the mom was Puerto Rican, Westminster in Orange County. Their kids were being put into the segregated Mexican school. And so they sued the Mendez family mm-hmm. and it went to the California Supreme Court. And that set in motion a legal precedent mm-hmm. to desegregate and integrate schools, not only in California, but across the country. So like, and again, that's, I consider that a Chicano history as well, you know?
Yeah. I mean, just the fact that you're talking about anything happening in California makes it a part of American history.
Right.
Right. And it's like, yes, it's Chicano history, but it's also a part of like what we should be learning in like American history mm-hmm. in the public education system.
Yeah. And honestly, I feel ignorant as fuck.
Well, and that's, Chicano is American.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's literally not Mexican. It's American.
Yeah.
It's an American identity.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Oh my God. Honestly, I feel so, really, because it's just not something that I was ever exposed to. Like I didn't feel the need to, just because that was my always like thing. I was like, well, I'm not Chicana, so I don't really know.
But even as a non-Chicana, like you don't have to be a Chicana to know like the history.
I know, but it
very much impacts like our day-to-day life now.
Right. But I think just because I never had someone to have that conversation with, I don't feel like it was ever just like open to me. Like even just the question, like being able to ask the questions, like, I don't know if this is just like my parents, but I just feel like Hispanic parents tend to not want to have those difficult conversations because it kind of takes them back to their own times. Like my mom just told me like, oh yeah, when I first moved to this country, like secretly because, you know, sexism and whatever, like my dad, he changed. But at the time, like she would secretly take English classes mm-hmm. and stuff like that. And that's something that like really scarred her. And I didn't know that until like a few days ago, because when I was younger, my parents were also very strict, but they were also really closed off and having those kind of open conversations, especially after that incident where they thought I was gay. They were just very much like, oh, you're becoming like too liberal and a feminazi mm. and whatever. So mm-hmm. they would kind of like, when I would have questions like that growing up, they would really like shut that down. Because that happened to me when I was like 12.
Yeah.
So I think I was just like, you know what? Like,
I'm going to stick to kind of just this little bubble that makes me feel safe because of that incident that That's I was real. Like, I don't really have the space to talk to anyone about anything.
I think it's interesting too, because so what we know to be true, like race is a social construct. Mm-hmm. Culture is also a social construct.
Yeah.
And none of us are born with culture.
Right.
We have to be taught culture. We have to be taught language, taught culture. We have to be taught what our name is. We don't know our names until someone teaches us.
Gives it to us,
you know? And so I think part of it is I identify as a Chicana because my father taught me that that's what I am.
Yeah.
I was raised with that in the house. So if you're not getting that in your house from your parents and you're not also accessing that education in school or you're in a community that is like reinforcing that, I don't know where else that would happen for you. You know what I mean?
No, like, it's true. Yeah. Because thinking back too, like my dad never said like my dad is the Peruvian one, but he was always like, you're Peruvian Mexican, you're Latina. Mm. It was never, I never, and because he's not Chicano, right?
Yeah.
He didn't grow up here. There was never a conversation in my family about being Chicano. Mm-hmm. However, my brothers are older and they have more of like the Chicano experience. And I don't think they identify as Chicano. I think they just identify as Mexican, maybe Mexican American. Mm-hmm. But like even in same families, right? Siblings have this very different experience as well. We have different fathers. So that also plays a role where they're, you know, Mexican American. Mm-hmm. So even like that wasn't taught to me either. It wasn't until like being at a university, taking Chicano studies, you know, and learning this history. It took me going to Santa Barbara to like learn the history that was in my backyard. It was in Los Angeles.
Yeah. And I do kind of really push that to my little brother because he's like, I don't need school. And I'm like, I know, but there's so many classes. Like you don't need a degree, but you can take advantage of the classes that are there and available to you. And I feel like that's when I kind of started becoming a little open-minded too, was when I started going to community college, and I started just taking random classes that I was like, oh, this is interesting, this is cool. But I think I was always nervous to take some kind of, I guess, Chicano history classes, because I was always like, well, where's the Mexican classes? You know what I mean? Like, it wasn't really that. But I definitely have been, especially now lately that we've been going more to LA and I've been kind of communicating more with people from LA, that I'm like, there's so much culture that I would love to kind of just like learn about. But it's far, like, it you know, to far. Make that it's drive, far. Especially from here, there's so much construction. So it takes me like 2 hours to get there. But I do, it's like definitely a community that I would love to kind of just go and expose myself to.
Yeah.
Totally.
I don't know why, but I'm feeling very inspired today. I mean,
excellent.
Yeah. Well, thank you guys. You guys are so like awesome. I feel like I feel bad that you guys are like teaching us all this shit.
I don't feel bad. I feel like I love learning, you know, I don't know everything. And I feel like, definitely, I feel like that's kind of I feel like I resonate with that comment you made. Like, I feel bad, like you're teaching us, because I feel like I've always felt like I had to enter a room knowing everything and just to kind of prove myself. I feel like I've carried that energy with me for so long, and it's like, no, I'm learning, I'm growing every single day, and I rather come in with an open mind and listen, because I feel like I'm used to talking a lot, and you know. And sometimes I do feel like I know a lot, but I know there's still a lot for me to learn. So I love listening. I feel like everything you guys just said, I feel like my mind's just kind of like going everywhere all over the place. I'm just like, oh crap. Like,
I know. I'm like, there's so much to learn.
There's so much. And I actually did take a Chicano studies class in university. So I remembered I had an amazing Chicano studies professor that was just amazing. Like, I fucking love it. I'm actually thinking about going to my university and being like, can I interview you? Like, come on the show. He was the best. I was actually born in Mexico. So I didn't grow up there. I came over here when I was like a year old. So I definitely do. I do consider myself, I see myself being a Chicana, you know. I do consider myself like Mexican American. But it's funny because I was born in Mexico and I was very much, I felt like I assimilated to like the American culture. I mean, I knew at home I was Mexican, and I knew that, you know, like the food was amazing, the music was amazing and everything. But I always did feel like I resonated more with the American culture. So I feel like a lot of people have always told me that I'm white passing. So I always felt like, in a sense, protected. I never felt like I was ever attacked. I never felt like I got like there was not really, I never felt like I had repercussions for any kind of, I just felt like I had a good life, you know? So to hear like these perspectives, it's like, damn, like I don't know. I want to be more educated about it, definitely, because I don't want to just be like, oh, it doesn't affect me. So it's like, I don't have to talk about it, you know? And because I am Mexican at the end of the day, mm-hmm. like I was literally born in Mexico. And
I think like also there's this piece on Latinidad is also a constructed, right?
Yes.
Like all these identities are constructed, they're created. And so like, there's no strict definition of what a Latina is.
Yeah.
And that also means that there's no strict like definition to what a Chicano is either.
Exactly.
And that also means that there can be overlap.
Exactly.
You know
exactly.
what I mean? Because so much of this is subjective and a person by person. But I think it, like, we're all constantly learning about it because this is an invention that's also always changing.
Yeah.
And like we interviewed an indigenous activist, mm-hmm. Odilia Romero, and she's from Mexico, but what she talks about is like, she's not Mexican. She's an indigenous woman who speaks an indigenous language. Does she speak Spanish? Yeah, of course. Does she also speak English? Yes. But she identifies with her indigenous nation. She does not identify as Mexican or Hispanic or Latina. We had her on the show and she was like, you Latinas and your whole thing, like, good for you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, love you guys. That's not me. I'm an indigenous woman. And I speak an indigenous language.
And
you know what I mean?
I've heard that. That's actually some like new information that has been brought to me recently about how Mexican isn't even...
It's not a race.
Exactly. It's not a race.
It's a country.
Exactly. A country. We're actually indigenous people. And I was like, oh, like.
Yes, but not everyone is indigenous.
Something like that. I don't want to butcher it, but.
This is like my issue with like some Chicanos, right? Mm-hmm. Is where they're like, well, I'm not Mexican. I'm not Hispanic. I'm Chicano because I'm indigenous. Yes, like a lot of us do have indigenous roots, like, but can we all claim that we're indigenous? No.
Right.
And so for me, like when I was having my Chicana awakening, right, and I saw it as a political identity because it is, like I very much felt like, oh, I have indigenous ancestry, so I'm a Chicana and I'm gonna like, that's what I'm rooted in. But no, like my family, yes, we all have indigenous roots, especially my Peruvian side. But like, I do not have the experience of an indigenous person.
Right.
Especially in Los Angeles, especially in California. And so I think that there is parts of the Chicano movement where that does get like conflated. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, I think we should all be very cautious of like using a label, an identity that does not fit us.
Yeah.
When we're talking about indigeneity. Mm-hmm. And so what I love about Odilia is that she talks about like, y'all are doing your thing. We're doing our thing over here. How do we build together? How do we make a better world for us as indigenous people with your support?
Mm-hmm. Wow. And what does she mention? What is that? How can we learn? How can we?
You can tune into that episode.
Yes!
On
episode
of radio. She lays it out.
Love it.
And also Odilia runs an organization called My Cielo. And so they provide like indigenous language translation services. So they have an indigenous language bank. Cause also in Mexico, there's like tons of indigenous languages spoken.
Yeah.
In LA alone, there's tons of indigenous languages spoken. And so we as like Mexican Americans, Mexicans, Latinos, what have you, are very obsessed with Spanish. But what Odilia talks about, like that's the most important thing to us is whether or not we speak Spanish. Mm-hmm. It always comes back to that. Odilia talks about how that Spanish obsession results in death for indigenous people because everyone assumes that they all just speak Spanish. And then in hospitals, in courthouses, with the police, in employment, they're not getting the language help that they need because everyone's just assuming, oh, Spanish last name. You look Mexican. You speak Spanish. When that's not the case, right?
Yeah.
So yeah, tune into the episode. She goes in depth and check out mycielo.org for more.
Yeah, that's amazing. Yeah, I think because Sol and I are from the same place in Mexico and their natives are, they're called huicholes. And I always loved that because they make stuff like that. It's called, it's right there on top. Mm-hmm. Sorry. It's called like Chaquita style. Mm-hmm. And I love it. And I feel like, especially with indigenous, because I was so surrounded by them growing up, because I would go to Mexico a lot. I was always so into, but I think language just in general was always so interesting to me. Like people who are not just bilingual, but like multilingual. Like I think that's like such an incredible skill. And I always wanted to kind of learn the dialect of like the native people from my state. So I was always so interested by that. I'm so surprised I didn't like run, because I would just kind of scroll and then pick an episode on your guys's podcast.
And that episode we put together, yeah, because
I was about to say,
of some Latino nonsense, right? I don't know if you guys covered the leaked Fed tapes, the city council Fed tapes with Nuri Martinez and Kevin De Leon.
I feel like I did hear about that, but I don't think we talked about it on here.
So that's why we put that episode together.
Yeah. So girl boss Nuri Martinez, right? First president of, first Latina president, right, of the LA City Council, was caught with Kevin De Leon, who's still on the city council.
Ron Gil Herrera.
Gil Cedillo, who is no longer has a seat. He was voted out and replaced by Onises Hernandez, who we've had on
Look Shout at out.
Shout out.
Tune into the tour episode, yeah, with Onises.
That one too. But they were caught with having this backdoor conversation, talking about gerrymandering, disempowering black voters.
I remember
saying
that.
Saying racist things about a black child. Another city councilman's child. And they were caught and it was leaked. And these are supposedly like our elected officials, our best Latinos, yes, in office, right? And this is what they were caught doing. And so we invited, and there were also a lot of anti-Indigenous remarks made by all of them.
Yeah.
And so to cover it, you know, we very strongly believe in passing the mic at Locatora. And so we didn't need to hear us talking about it. Mm-hmm. We obviously set the scene to let our listeners know. We obviously live in LA, have a lot of LA listeners.
Yeah.
We set the scene, let them know what was going on. It was breaking news in Los Angeles and nationwide. And we invited Odilia on to talk about it and give her perspective, wow, and how we can like cut the bullshit. Like,
yeah. Yeah.
It doesn't matter that you're the first Latina to do anything when you're tearing down other marginalized groups.
Exactly.
It doesn't matter. That's not enough.
Wow. And you know what? It is. I have a cousin and he's, he got his papers, but he always said, oh, when I get my papers, I'm going to work for ICE. And I'm like,
what
the fuck are you talking about? Like literally, right, what, yeah, are you talking about?
This is fascinating too, mm-hmm, right? Law enforcement, yep, border patrol, and then like corrections officers, mm-hmm, lots and lots and lots of Latinos.
Yeah.
Yes. LAPD is full of Latinos. Mm-hmm. Border patrol is full of Latinos, yeah, which brings me back to the conversation about Latinidad being a constructed,
yep,
identity made, yeah, up. What does it mean if like this is how, this is like the thinking, yeah, right?
Once this is, I get my presentation.
Once I get my papers, I'm joining
just
Border
Patrol.
Just
throw everything else out the window. It's, mm-hmm, so, it's wild to me. And it's sad because you don't, it's kind of like the officer that just got caught where he, you know, I think he was Border Patrol, right?
And he needed like his birth certificate. He turned it into like, I don't know if you guys have heard.
And turns out he's been undocumented.
He's been undocumented this, yeah, whole time, and like 27 years.
He's been the ill anti-immigrant, yeah, conservative, xenophobic, Mexican-American.
And they deport him. That's what he deserves. Yes,
that's
they did.
Crazy. Oh, wow.
Damn.
It's what he deserves.
Karma. No, really, that's like divine karma.
Honestly, I generally feel like he must have been doing some like extra shady shit for that shit to fall on him.
But
like
I do wonder like how, like his just reaction to that realization. Like, you know what I mean? Like, not to sympathize with him, but just to get really into that perspective of like, oh shit, like what have I, like I wonder if he had that what have I done moment.
I don't know. I feel like people like that don't have that self-reflection. No. I mean, it's, you see, like during the Trump administration, you would see people that were married to undocumented immigrants,
yeah,
vote,
yeah,
for Trump.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And they would interview them that and they would, sad, ask them, and then their partners would get deported and they would be like, well,
I didn't know. Yeah. I didn't think he meant it.
What? I thought he was just kidding. But his fingers crossed when he said.
I think that man's story also reveals a lot of like, if your entire identity hinges on your understanding of your citizenship status, mm-hmm, and what country you think you belong to, and that's the only thing that you're basing your entire understanding of yourself,
yeah,
well, it's, the veil is very thin, mm-hmm, and can be. The thing is people think like citizenship is, it's like in your blood.
Yeah.
They can take your fucking citizenship away from you. They don't care if you were born here.
Yeah.
They don't care if your mom was born here and if your grandma was born here.
They can literally do the fuck they want.
They can make you go back and prove citizenship going back several generations. They can force you to do that.
Yeah.
They can deport you if they want to. Like, it's not like a get, it's not a fail safe, you know, it's just documentation.
Yeah. It's literally just someone being like, okay. And there's that, that's pretty much it. Nothing else changes. There's no like big, like, I feel like people expect like a big movie kind of like running out and be like, ah, like smelling the fresh air. And it's just like, my
like
mom.
I'm worthy now.
Yeah. Like my, I told my mom, I was like, oh mom, like, did you feel really excited to get your citizenship? She's like, no. Like
it's like if citizenship is the type of thing that it's the different, it's like access to resources.
Yeah. That's it.
It's access to resources,
so much access.
Legal protections, you know, but does it inherently change who we are as people? I don't know. I don't think so.
Yeah.
I don't know. They were probably already that shitty before they even became citizens to think like that. You know what I mean? Like
there,
you had already had to have those like hateful thoughts to begin with. You don't just like get your citizenship and you're like, okay, like I'm a racist now. You know what I mean?
I think there's just a lot of that hierarchy that can happen like within Latino communities, right? Of like, oh, I'm not that Mexican, right? Or I'm not that immigrant, you know? And even in our own community, we want to be better than someone, right? And so to have like a white collar job, right? Or to have this aspirational career, I think, can definitely put you in a position or in a mindset where you want to look down on people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Power and you play yourself. Yeah.
Wow. Well, oh my gosh. That got so deep. I was like, I'm going to make them laugh. I'm going to do something cool. Literally just.
Yes, from kissing girls to Border
literally,
Patrol.
Literally, it'd be like that.
I actually think this is the most informational. For sure. Like, I don't think we've ever had someone that I felt like I, not that I don't learn from all the guests, but I learned this much.
I mean, I didn't say it.
Sorry, guys.
I wanted to tell you, Vanessa, going back, you said something like, I feel like I need to know everything.
Yeah, not necessarily now, but that's kind of like a conditioning that I had. Like, if I didn't know everything, I was like less than, or I couldn't say anything in a conversation, I would be ridiculed or, you know, be put down. And I just kind of carried a lot of that, just negativity. I feel like it really brought me down a lot. And I think definitely being in the podcasting space, and I also contribute that to my, I feel like I've been going through like a spiritual awakening recently. And I feel like that's definitely helped me to understand that I'm human. I don't need to know everything. And I'm always going to be a student of life. And there's never too, it's like a never ending journey of learning. And I'm always going to be learning something new. And I feel like I used to think like, well, I'm this grown age, like I should know this by now. You know, it's like, no, my life has been my own path and it's different from everybody's. And just because other people know things I don't know doesn't mean that I'm less than. And and I love learning. I love hearing these things. So
no, I mean, I wanted to tell you that like no one knows everything.
Yeah.
People that pretend to know everything don't know anything.
They don't know shit.
They don't know anything. Yeah. So like it's good to like be curious and like go with an open mind and do your research always, you know?
Yes. I feel like that's the part that I need to work on, doing my own research.
Mm-hmm.
Because I feel like I hear things and I'm like, okay, I feel like I can trust that.
I believe it.
Check your sources.
Like, the energy
always.
I'm getting from this is good, you know. But definitely.
I know. I love that. I like, if I don't feel like doing my research, I'll tell my husband, like, guess what they told me today? And then he'll be like, no way. And then he'll totally look it up and I'll be like, oh, cool. Like, now he's going to tell me. And I know he's not going to lie to me.
That's so funny.
A fact checker.
Smart.
It's good to have a fact checker.
He is. And I hate it because sometimes I know what I'm talking about and he'll pull out, like, Google.
He's just like, let me make
it. Yeah, he's like, are you sure? He'll check anyways. And I'm like, fuck you.
Yeah, totally. I think if there's, like, one message maybe for, like, the anyone on the internet is like, you have to read a book, babe.
Yes.
You have to, you have to take a class. You have to read an article. Like TikTok is a wealth of knowledge and information. There's a lot of misinformation on TikTok.
Yeah.
I would say like maybe mostly misinformation on TikTok. Mostly. Like it's just not a site for journalism.
No.
Journalism is out there. We can all read journalism. We can watch journalism. Journalists are very important. Fact checking is very important. You know, scholars still matter. And I think that like we can like spark our interest online, mm-hmm. but we got to take that somewhere else.
Yeah.
You know,
definitely. I actually heard that how when social media started becoming like more bigger and bigger, how journalists were taking a big hit because the masses were listening more to like influencers, and it's like they were getting like their credibility just for having a huge amount of followers. Mm-hmm. And these journalists have been doing the research and the work for years and actually putting out content that meant something and was very educational, were just not being listened to. And it was like very frustrating. And I was like, damn, remember when I consider myself a part of the masses? Cause I know I've been a part of that where it's like, I see like somebody saying something and like, it sounds good. I'm like, ooh, like, I know better now. Yeah. I'm like, you know, I feel like I've been like educated, and it's like, no.
I think a good like gut check or like way to like assess credibility, especially from like an influencer, is like a good influencer knows their power and they're going to cite their sources. They will tell you, I was reading the New York Times. I was reading said journalists.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And they said XYZ. I think on TikTok, we see a lot of people regurgitating facts and information from research that they didn't do themselves, but they like took an article, they were are regurgitating it, and they're not citing who wrote it, and that's the issue.
Yeah.
Because then they're the authority and they didn't do any of the research. We see like podcasts now get made. Someone will take a journalist article and like spin it into like a series, and that journalist gets no credit. So there's like cite your sources always.
Yeah. What we saw too, like, I don't know if you guys followed the Megan Thee Stallion Tory Lanez the coverage of the Tory Lanez trial, I should say.
Yeah.
He was being tried for shooting Megan. She was not on trial. It wasn't her trial. It was his trial. It was like the People versus Tory Lanez. Or whatever his real name is. And there were a number of bloggers, right, who were going to the courthouse every day. There were also legit press pass carrying journalists going to the courthouse and reporting on it. And it was so interesting to see like the bloggers, influencers, and the what they were tweeting out and what they were putting out, and then how the journalists were covering the trial, and then how the journalists ended up even doing coverage on the bloggers, because the bloggers are going in and have favoritism towards Tory, are talking about like the gossip of it all and what people are wearing. And it's not. And then we see like a lot of misogyny, a lot of like anti-woman coverage of these types of cases, especially coming from influencers and content creators, right? We talked about it a little bit on our show. Like, there's a lot of misogyny, the Amber Heard case, the way that influencers on TikTok were talking about Amber Heard was disgusting and based in a lot of misinformation. The way that the Megan Thee Stallion was being covered, based in tons of misinformation and misogyny. Britney still, you know, like, we've learned nothing from the Britney situation.
I listened to that episode right now that you're saying that. I do remember you talking about that, because I remember thinking back to the Amber Heard case and I was like, whoa, like, I guess it's easy to just watch and agree. And so when you said that, I was like, oh my God, I'm a bad feminist.
There were a lot of people that we saw that we like respect and that like, we know. Even lawyers, you know, citing and saying like misinformation, saying things that weren't true about Amber Heard, as if, I mean, we get break it down on the episode.
Yeah.
But I mean,
that's a good episode. I love that one.
I think, like to Mala's point, it's like you see the coverage is not the same.
Yeah.
You know, because you have to be like, there. I support the indie journalists. We started as like indie, right? And like, but there has to be like a level of like ethics and research when you're going to be covering like especially a trial.
Yeah. And I think it's okay to call things what they are. Like, I think there are people who are journalists and there are people who are not.
Yeah.
And I don't think all bloggers are journalists.
No.
And I don't think all podcasters are journalists.
Yeah.
And I don't think all writers are journalists.
Yeah. Yep.
Journalists are journalists.
Yes.
And we know there's a difference.
Yeah.
You know, a doctor is a doctor.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, and I don't
you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't even fully like identify as a journalist. Like, I identify more as like an audio storyteller. Do I do extensive research about everything? Yes. You know, but am I covering news? No, there's like different types of journalists. And I think that if you're like trying to take on like something, like if you're trying to get your information about like the coverage of a trial, like you should be reading a journalist.
Right.
You know? If you want to know what happened at like the Oscars and what people were wearing, you read the blog.
Read the blog.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Tune into the podcast. You can subscribe to the LA Times for like $1 a week. Literally. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And get your news.
I often wonder like how much like the paywalls have influenced, like are people actually reading like articles anymore? Like are people actually reading the LA Times or the New York Times?
Mm-hmm.
Because there is like a level of access, right? Like you have to go out and you have to like subscribe and you have to pay a certain fee. You get like a certain number for free of articles. And so I'm wondering, like I always wonder, like is that why people aren't reading anything anymore, or like what is it?
I think it's more so the fact that because it's usually bad news, it's so much easier to see your bad news for like 30 seconds and then just scroll past it, as opposed to like sitting down and really getting down to the details of it, because it's hurt, like it's painful to know how much is going on in the world. I feel like that's what happens with me. Like I'll start looking stuff up and then I'm like, this is so much, like this is so much bad news that like I don't want to, I want to be ignorant because it's like it hurts me and like it makes me sad. And so it's so much easier to just be like, you know what, like I'll just hear it from someone else and I'll take their word for it.
Yeah, I definitely feel like with the rise of just the internet and social media and just technology in general, I feel like people have become more desensitized and they're more preoccupied with their own personal lives and what's going on at work and their relationships and friendships, and they don't really feel like it's affecting them directly, so they're not really, they don't feel like it's a, they need to be educated or they need to read or they need to, like listening to you guys talk about how, you know, our the generations before us did sit-ins and they, you know, protested and all of these things, it makes me sad to think that this generation is just like comfortable, you know, and they're, all they're worried about is their jobs and their careers and finding the perfect like partner and getting married, you know, and they're not really, we're not gonna, it feels like we're not gonna be a generation of change, you know, it just feels like we're just becoming more like selfish and just thinking about ourselves and that's it. Like,
well, there's a lot of national organizing happening like right now, like
for
abortion rights, for like racial inequity, like gender justice, just social justice in general.
I mean,
like
the Black Lives Matter protests.
Like, don't want to discredit like any of like the national organizing that's happening.
Yeah.
So yeah, there's like, there's a lot. It's like you have to read about it, you have to tune in, you have to like learn about it.
Yeah, but at the same time, I do agree to an extent that I think, you know, I think that we can be comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
We can be comfortable. And if you're comfortable, right, then that burning rage or desire to get out there and change it, that's, that push is not there.
Yeah.
When the thing is really directly impacting you and making it impossible for you to live or eat or work, then of course, that's why uprisings happen and people take to the streets and they make it happen because, you know, this is about survival.
Yeah.
And I think sometimes what happens is like, going back to the Amber Heard stuff, like the way Amber Heard was treated and the fact that Johnny Depp took her to court in the way that he did is actually should scare all of us quite a lot, because it can impact every single one of us, especially as women. Mm-hmm. Again, we talk about this in the episode, but Johnny Depp sued Amber Heard for libel because she wrote about herself in an article and how she identified herself as being like a survivor and a voice for domestic violence survivors. She never named Johnny Depp in this article. She never called him an abuser in this article. She was talking about herself. And that was the piece of writing that he took to court. They were both found responsible for libeling each other.
Yeah.
He was also found responsible for libel. And before this libel case, Johnny Depp had already been found responsible for multiple accusations of domestic violence against Amber Heard at a trial that they had in the UK.
Mm-hmm.
He was already tried for domestic violence abroad and found responsible for like 12 out of the 14 complaints.
Why
right?
was it in the UK and not here?
I think they lived there for a time.
Well,
they worked there for a time.
Okay.
I think they tried to try him here in the US, but it didn't happen.
Okay.
And then he brought that libel suit against her. So if a very, very rich and powerful woman like Amber Heard, who's a movie star, can be sued for libel and dragged through the mud and treated like absolute shit just for writing about herself. Yeah. That's scary. And that's something that we should all be concerned about. Because what happens if one day one of us or somebody we know, with the rates of, you know, violence against women being what they are, what if somebody needs to come out and say something about, you know, somebody hurt me.
Yeah.
You know, something bad has happened to me, or this was my experience.
Yeah.
Now there's a legal precedent and we can all be sued for libel for just talking about ourselves, you know? And so that's like why these things matter. Like pop culture is culture and like we're all experiencing culture to different degrees, you know? And so if it can hurt her, like it can hurt us. And if it can hurt also like even more marginalized people, like it definitely can hurt us, you know?
Yeah.
I love that episode. Everything you're saying right now, I was like, oh, I remember when I was listening.
Yeah. Tune into that episode. Yeah. Especially in light of like any celebrity trials, like there's always more going on. Yeah. There's always more going on. I think it's really fascinating. Yeah.
Wow, I kept trying to not be deep, but it kept going back. But I really do want to thank you guys for coming on here and honestly just sharing so much knowledge with us and making the drive, truthfully.
Yeah, thank you for having us. You guys are so great. I love the show. It's very fun.
Thank you. Honestly, yeah, you guys are killing it. When I listen to your podcast, I'm like, I try to just nitpick like what I love so much about it and be like, how can I apply this into our podcast? And I do think it's that more than anything, but I just... the fact that you guys talk about such, I guess, what's the word? I guess like heavy topics, but you guys are just so like, it just sounds like such a casual conversation while still being so educational. So I really do love that about your podcast.
Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate it.
So go ahead and plug in all your stuff.
Yeah. Anything you guys want to mention?
Yeah. Sure. Okay. You can follow me at The Osa Femme on all socials. You can follow us at Locatora_radio on all socials. We have a weekly weekly show. We have a weekly show. You can tune in every Wednesday on the iHeartRadio app and all listening platforms.
And I'm at Mala_Munoz. You can visit our website, locatoraradio.com, and tune in to Marihuanera, a podcast for potheads.
Yes, that one's so fun.
You do have her on the Marihuanera.
Yes, I would love that. I would love that so much because I love your podcast. And congratulations. I saw that you had like won an award for one of your episodes, which was so good. Yes,
thank you.
Yes, amazing. You guys are doing honestly killing it. And you guys really are just so inspirational. So thank you guys for all the awareness and for everything you're carving for the future, you know, podcasters and everything.
Thank you guys.
Thank you guys. And thank you besties for watching. Tune in to the Patreon if you guys want to see more. Obviously you can find me at Steph Scott Milk. Saul usually plugs his stuff at the end and I stopped doing that, so I'm gonna do it again. Follow me on Steph Scott Milk. I deleted my Twitter, but follow me on Instagram.
Why?
I had a mental breakdown and I was like, fuck, I actually deleted my Instagram too, but then I got it back. yeah. But anyways, follow me at Steph Scott Milk.
That's awesome. I'm not going to plug anything.
Oh, but this is Vanessa. Bye, besties. Love you guys so much.
Bye, guys.
Hope you guys enjoyed the episode. Now we are going to take some time and shout out our subscribers on Patreon. We are back on Patreon, everyone. So if you guys want to tune in and see more of our shenanigans, please, please subscribe. Here's a little preview just to give you a taste in what goes down. And roll the clip.
I'm going to commentate like it's golf. Vanessa's winding up. Form, posture, great slap. Great slap, great contact. Follow through was great. Let's get that replay. Here comes Stephanie. Form is great. Slap.
Did you guys see that? Go ahead. I don't even got to say it. Subscribe. And we're going to shout out our amazing fans that are already subscribed right now. Roll the clip.
First off, we want to shout out Jocelyn Alvarez. Thank you so much. I appreciate you from the bottom of my heart. Denise Chavez, Laura Peña, Tatiana Michelle Long, Samantha Montelongo, Robert Naomi Maldonado Cuevas, Andrea Fernandez, Maria Felipe, Lorenzo Ortiz, Sandra Gonzalez, Karen Cespedes.
Shout out to Karen.
Shout out to you. Shout out to all of you. I want to give you a big fat kiss on the mouth.
Yes. Love that. So if you want to be kissed by Vanessa, go ahead and subscribe to our Patreon.
Because I will definitely kiss you on the mouth.
Love you guys.